All right, we are looking at Ephesians 6, 1 through 4 today. Children and fathers. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, there's sheets back there if you want paper to scratch on and take notes. Or you can open your own Bibles. Ephesians 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. All right, I'm going to read that again. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. All right, so starting out in verse 1 there, children. Children, what age are we talking about here? It doesn't say. Are you always a child of your parents? Yes. Yes, that doesn't change. Well, how about obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. I'm going to split this up a little bit. Childhood and adulthood. I think we would all agree that there's some differences in the way you obey and honor your parents that changes from childhood to adulthood. Now, this is, of course, on the diagram, it's easy to make a firm line right here, isn't it? But as many of you know who've raised children, it's kind of a slide into the one, and sometimes a springboard, and sometimes it doesn't always work the way we want it to go. So I want to talk about, in just a second, how we obey, how we honor at these couple stages of life. Are there other stages that I should be adding to this? And it's probably going to change again when you get to older age, parents' old age, the honor that you show. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. What does this little phrase, in the Lord, mean? In reverence to God? Yeah, according to God's ways. If your parents aren't obeying the Lord, or if they're giving instructions contrary to the Lord, you're obligated to obey the Lord. I mean, we'd say almost the same thing about governments. You know, as long as they're not asking us to disobey the Lord, we should obey them, because there's some things that we live in this country, we leave it up to wisdom. If they set speed limits and they've determined in their studies, we think this is the most healthy speed limit for the populace. Okay, here's where we live. We should obey. If they ask us to disobey the Lord, what do we do? Well, we can't obey those commands because they're contrary to what God's given us. They're contrary to our relationship with God. So, yes, I think the same thing applies with parents. You're going to obey your parents in the Lord, meaning that there's some boundaries there. There's some boundaries to parents' authority. It's not total. God's authority is total. Parents is limited. And what's it limited to? It's limited to the children's age. The parents' authority, it was God's plan that after a time, children would leave their parents' home. And once you leave the parents' home, you're leaving their authority. Yeah, Dave says, even after you leave their home, one way of honoring them is to continue to respect their wishes. They still have their own home. They still have their own set of rules there, and to be able to go in and out and abide by their wishes and honor their wishes. It also sets a limit on direction for a person's life. When parents are told, what is the content of what a parent should be teaching their children or instructing their children? And what's Deuteronomy 6? A lot of you know Deuteronomy 6. It's the commandments of the Lord that's supposed to be the main content of the instruction. We're teaching our children to know their Maker. We're teaching them to know God the Father and His Son, Jesus Christ, and to fear Him, to love Him, to trust Him, to obey Him. I think that's part of what's meant by this little phrase, in the Lord. Every parent probably has their own personal desires for their kids to do this or do that or become this or become that. And you've probably experienced yourself or seen in people around you where somebody drives a child to do all these things, to pick up these hobbies, to pick up these interests, to get this occupation or this job. Okay, is that good or bad? What do you guys think? Does it depend on the child? Absolutely it does. This is again where we are not God. We're not the maker, the creator of our children. It is not my wishes and my will for this child's life that's going to come to fruition. We're merely entrusted with children. And so when he says, in the Lord, there's a limit there that I have to go, how did God make this child? How did God make this child to glorify Him? God has a plan for this child's life. Part of His plan is that I teach him to know and fear the Lord, and I love him, instruct him, guide him in the way that he should go. But it's not my will for the kid's life as far as hobbies, interests, occupation that's supposed to shape and drive his life or her life. Our instruction is primarily supposed to be about in the Lord. Now, he says, for this is right. What does it mean that it's right? in what ways could it be right? I think there's multiple here. The what? It follows the commandment. Yeah, if the parents are instructing in the Lord, it's right for the children to obey. Because that's God's plan. Commandments, instruction flowing down from God through the parents to the children, obedience flowing back up the other way. I mean, it's right in the sense that that's how God made the world. That He made parents to instruct and raise the children. And He made the children to be under their care, under their authority, and to obey that. It's right, I think, in the sense that it's good for a society. If you have parents instructing and children obeying, that's good and productive for a society. It's the breaking down of a family that leads to all kind, very immediate decay within that family unit. And then obviously you've got a breakdown of, there's no instruction. If the father's not in the home, there's not instruction happening. There's not love. There's not guiding. There's not shaping. Which, you know, continues to have lots and lots of effects in society. Because folly's bound up in the heart of a child, and if that's what they're living out, it's destructive. It's destructive to themselves. It's destructive to those around them that they're going to affect. Verse 2, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land. Okay, so we've got two commands here for children. Obey your parents in the Lord, honor your father and mother. We'll start with obey. It's a fairly straightforward command. What does obey mean? Submit to their authority. Without delay. I need to pick this up again. I actually remember, because I was reading this again yesterday, we used to have a song in our house. I haven't done it with the last couple kids. Need to pick it up again with Evan. But we used to sing, "We obey the first time, every time with a happy heart." How do we obey, kids? We obey the first time. Yeah, first time, every time, happy heart. I mean, that's a great picture of obedience to God, isn't it? Yeah, without delay. So, I mean, obedience is real simple. Very simple definition. You hear the command and you do it. Right? Not very difficult to understand. Yes. Good question. Is this inclusive of internal obedience or versus an external obedience? Yes, ideally you want people who are obeying with a right heart, from the heart. Jesus tells that one, he tells the one, or asks the question. So there's two sons. One of them says, The father gives him a command. One of them says, "Yes, I'll do it," and he doesn't go do it. The other one, he says, "Go do it," and the son says, "No," but then he goes and does it. Which one obeyed? The second son obeyed. The first one didn't obey. And this is where, you know, Tony's talked multiple times about these you have different desires competing in your heart. Sometimes there's a desire there that says, I don't want to obey. And so boom, that's what popped out of the second son's mouth. I don't want to do that. But he reflected for a minute and decides, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to go do that. So in a sense, Jesus is saying, okay, we saw that there's this desire in the son's heart, but he thought about it, corrected himself, and went and did it. He obeyed. So, this is something that Rebecca and I talk about often is sometimes you see on your children's face or in conversation with them, they don't want to obey. And then they go do it. We got to save that thought for the provoking, don't provoke your children to anger. That's one place where, you know, at times we need to, I'm down on verse 4 now. If we drive for perfect, perfect obedience. I mean, Jesus can give perfect obedience, but all of us are, because of sin nature, we're going to have these little desires competing. Little desire that wants to be lazy and doesn't want to do it. A little desire that doesn't want to be as loving as I should, so I really don't want to do it. And if we drive for 100% obedience, we're going to exasperate our kids. And sometimes I think it's right that we go ahead and we accept, okay, he had a little bit of a grumbling attitude, but he went and did what he was supposed to. Or she wasn't really happy about what she was asked to do, but she went and did it. We need to be sure that we don't exasperate our kids, don't provoke them to anger by demanding a perfect obedience. You say what? Yeah, we're not perfect. We are not perfect. I will not repeat what Pastor said over here because it would be anathema. Honoring. What does honoring mean? What does honoring mean? Okay, following the instructions your parents give you, even if it's not something that you want to do. So here's one way for young and old, speaking well of your parents to other people. It is easy as a kid to say, oh, my parents do this. My parents do this. When this happens, you should see my parents. But now that I'm older, I realize it's pretty easy to do that is when you're older. And to think, well, I wish it wasn't this way. Again, none of us are perfect. Honoring somebody means we're lifting up the good things that are there. And it's the glory of a man to overlook an offense. There's a way to show honor even to the ungodly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said one of her friends would use the phrase, "My parents were being the best parents that they knew how to be." With most parents, there is some good that you can point out and highlight. Yeah, so Tony said Matthew 15, the Pharisees are talking to Jesus, and Jesus brings up this command and says, "Honor your father and mother," and says, "For the sake of your tradition," that they were devoting money to God, devoting it to the temple, rather than supporting their parents who were in need of financial support. Jesus says, "You guys, in doing that, you think you're honoring the Lord, but you're breaking His commandment." And so one of the ways of showing honor is giving financial support in the time that they need it. So yeah, moving down here, especially toward this older age. Sometimes, by tragedy, it comes earlier than that, but many times, giving support, financial, physical, emotional, giving care, in our parents' later years that's honoring your parents. That's giving them what's due for what they have given to you. Any other thoughts on honoring? I mean, I can think sometimes it's merely listening, seeking their advice, seeking their counsel, calling them and asking them. In verse 2, this is the first commandment with a promise. So one of the questions I had this week as I was looking at this text going, okay, first commandment with a promise. Why is this one so special that it gets a promise? I mean, if I had been reading the Ten Commandments, I don't know that I would have assigned special significance to this one over and above all the others. But Paul does for some reason, draws attention to it, that this is the first one that has a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. What is so special, or what is significant about this commandment that it gets a promise like that? Yeah. Recognizing the authority of the family structure that was ordained by God. You learn how to obey God by obeying your parents. Yeah, you know, it's. I think we were talking about this last week. In Peter, where it says, "Husbands, love your wives in an or live with your wives in an understanding way, lest your prayers be hindered." You can have somebody who thinks their relationship with God is okay, and their closest relationship with their wife is not okay. What's Peter saying about this relationship? No, your prayers are hindered. This relationship is not 100% okay and correct and functioning as it should be. How do we know? Because this one's not. And I think for children, that's one of the reasons that this is the first commandment with a promise, because for children, they can think, I'm fine, I'm okay. They don't see that their heart is not in the right place, and they don't see that their mind is not in the right place. Where's it going to come out first? I think it's going to come out first in the relationship with their parents. And if the relationship with the parents is wrong, that, assuming we're parenting in the Lord, in the right authority, right boundaries, that's going to say something about their relationship with God. In John chapter 8, John has a lot to say about Jesus' relationship with the Father. And I have a couple verses to read here. John 8, 38. I speak of what I have seen with my Father. You do what you've heard from your Father. In verse 48, he says, the Jews answered him, are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? Jesus says, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. John 10, 15 to 17. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them in also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. So Jesus is talking about the mission that he's here doing, bringing in sheep into God's fold. For this reason, the Father loves me. Because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. So there, you get the picture from John 8 and John 10. Jesus is listening to what the Father tells him. He's speaking what the Father tells him to speak. He's doing what the Father wants him to do. He's fulfilling all the wishes and the desires of his Father. And so this promise of verse 3 in Ephesians 6, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land, when we read that and we hear that, the first thing we should think is that promise belongs to Jesus. That reward belongs to Jesus. He's not telling us this because, hey, you know what? If you obey your parents in the Lord, you're going to live long in the land. You might not live long in the land. That covenant and that promise belongs to Christ because he's the one who fulfilled it. He's the one who accomplished it. We all failed. That covenant and that promise in that sense, really belongs only to Christ. And it belongs to everyone who belongs to Christ by way of God's mercy and forgiveness, that we come back into that relationship with the Father through Christ. But I think he's quoting that to say, this is important to the Lord. God gives us a promise because this is close to God's heart. You know if there's love and glory and honor happening in the way God wants glory and honor and love to happen, simply with this obedience. Listening to his voice. Listening to the parents' voice. Obeying them. Okay, I need to... Got like 13, 14 minutes left. We need to move on to that, to the verse 4. although we've spoken a lot about parents' instruction already. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Okay, there we have it again. The instruction and the discipline, the training that's happening is in the Lord. It's of the Lord. Frankly, in the big scheme of life, it doesn't matter if your child is picking up garbage for a living or they're a neurosurgeon. They can honor the Lord all the days of their life, no matter what they're doing. And here he's saying, it is the instruction and the training of the Lord that is most important. He says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And this word is used throughout the Old Testament. It's 40 or 50 times. And it's the same word that every time it says, the people of Israel provoked the Lord to anger with their golden calves and with the idolatry in Hosea, with their whoredom, their adultery to the Lord. They provoked him to anger. So, you know, the children of Israel are provoking God the Father. But here he says, okay, parents, don't provoke your children to anger. Now, why doesn't he say, children, don't provoke your parents to anger? If the kids are obeying and honoring, they won't. They won't provoke them to anger. Well, I think, you know, going back to the first idea that folly is bound up in the heart of a child, there's going to be a lot of provoking things. The ideal situation is the parents are more mature than the kids. And they're going to have to tolerate a lot of things from the kids. Just another facet of how God made the world, for the glory of our sanctification, for us to grow into maturity. He made it like this. The parents are supposed to learn gentleness, patience, long-suffering, forgiveness. God has a lot of things for the parents to learn. And he rigged the game this way so that you will learn it. Or you're going to go crazy in the midst of it. So what are ways that you can provoke your children to anger? Demanding that they... Say it again, demanding that they not be a child, that they act and think and respond like an adult, even though they're in a child's body. Unrealistic expectations. Can you name one or two? Yeah, expecting them to sit and listen longer than they're able, expecting them to act more mature than their age. Being inconsistent. Yeah, being inconsistent. You know, there's a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where he's got a picture of I think it's the coffee table in the living room, and he's got a hammer and nails, and there's nails sticking up all out of this thing. And his dad comes in the room and says, what were you doing? Or says, what were you thinking? And it's apparent Calvin has no thought in his mind. He has no idea why that popped into his head and why he's doing that. I can remember, this has helped me with our kids. There were times where on the farm, I would break something or I would do something, And looking back now with a 39-year-old mind, I can think, oh, I should have done this and this and this. And how did I miss that? And I'd have to radio my dad. I'm stuck in the field. I'm stuck in the ditch. I'm stuck in the tailwater pit. I'm stuck. And he would come and go, what were you thinking? And I would go, I don't know. I just don't know. And I remember that happening so many times. And then later on, it wasn't until after college, I had to take one of these child and human development classes, and you learn about how the brain's working and connecting. And actually, adolescents and high school boys' brains, the synapses are not yet all connected. And so, even biologically, to demand that they have the ability to think of all the factors in the situation and pay attention to all the things that are going on and make the decision you would make, no, that's going to provoke them to anger. And you're going to hold them to a standard that it's biologically impossible for them to meet. And spiritually, maturity, it's impossible for them to meet because they haven't yet learned wisdom. That's part of your role there, is to guide them in wisdom. And they learn it by growing in it, by hearing it, by experiencing it. My kids are in here. Maybe you want to share some things that provoked you to anger. No. How about not letting some things go? Thinking that we need to address every single thing that we see. Yeah, nitpicking. Man, that'll drive you to anger. Yes, yes, great. A lack of positive reinforcement. Correction should be in the context of love and affection and relationship. That should not be the warp and the woof of your parenting. You can't change character traits. You can't change it. You can only go so far with whatever traits are there. And as a parent, not giving your kids a chance to explain themselves. Yeah. Yeah. Treating them as, you're training an animal, it's supposed to go this way. Well, they're thinking, reasoning human beings made in the image of God. And the older they get, the more important it is to listen and to hear and give instruction and wisdom. Yeah, I've seen that in my house. If I don't listen, that provokes to anger. If I just make a decision or walk into a situation where there's conflict going on and we're going to do this, 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 here's your punishment, away we go. Ooh, that's not good, patient, that's not wise on my part. It's not what a good judge does. What's a good judge do? He listens to one side of the story, to both sides of the story. Yeah, being a bad judge and a bad listener will provoke them. Showing no affection, just correction. This is just, this is just a way to be an immature parent, taking everything personally. We have to constantly remind ourselves that, okay, if there's a problem here, the real problem is with this person and the Lord. And I am a mediator in God's scheme here. God put me here in between to communicate God's wisdom and to explain to them what's going on in their mind and their heart and what they need to do to fix it. But ultimately, it's not against me that they've sinned. Just like David with Uriah and Bathsheba, he says, against the Lord only I've sinned. He realizes that. It was his sin against the Lord, and Uriah and Bathsheba happened to be the characters that got in between at the wrong time. So it was sin against them, but ultimately it was him and the Lord. The same thing's true about our kids and the Lord. If there's conflict and sin, it's ultimately them needing to be right with the Lord. And so what can happen is they lashed out at you or they lashed out at a sibling and you stepped in to intervene and all of a sudden you're in conflict with them. Need to remember and tell them, look, this is not between you and me. This is between you and the Lord. And to try to maintain our own coolness, maturity, and wisdom in the moment to not get engaged in a personal fight, but to guide them. This is the discipline. This is the training in the Lord. Son, daughter, here's what's happening right now. You're being unloving to your sibling, or you're being unloving to me. That indicates that there's a deeper problem happening inside of you. Because even Christ was able, when he was reviled, to not revile in return. He didn't trade insult for insult. He remained faithful, trusting himself to God, to walk before God with a clean conscience and a pure heart. So making the conflict about you and them is a way to provoke them to... So that's a way to provoke yourself to anger, too. I mean, you're both going to be angry at the end of that. Yeah. Amen. Always be in a restorative mode. Blessed are the peacemakers. Parents have to be peacemakers. We're making peace all the time. All right, let's stop there. We're going to pick up with slaves and masters next week. So let's stop and we'll take a break before the service.